It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geis are here with me. And now Max Foisy, Max on Movies, joins us for the showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Max. How are you?
Paul, I'm doing great. I was at my desk editing some audio for tomorrow night's movie show, and it's really weird to pop into a studio and somebody goes, "You got 30 seconds." I'm grabbing my prep and I'm ready to go. And now here we are. We're on the air. It's like magic.
It is the magic of radio.
I mean, usually studio for a good hour and you're prepping, and now I'm like, okay, let's go. It's plus I'm highly caffeinated.
Also, you're excited because yesterday you celebrated 6 years of fatherhood.
Yes, which is kind of incredible. And happy birthday again as of yesterday.
Oh, don't make it about him.
Oscar Foisy, who's six.
That's nice for Oscar that he's six. Wow. But not enough times do parents get credit when, because we're reaching a milestone too.
Yes, it's true.
I've kept this thing alive for 6 years.
Yeah. I kept my marriage together too for the last 6 years. Yes. Which is kind of amazing.
That's also a very important thing,
right
to do that. So yeah, congratulations.
Thank
to you.
Thanks. Yeah, we're having a bowling party tomorrow for him, and this is a strange thing. We took him to another kid's birthday party last year, and it was a bowling party, and we thought, whatever, he's not gonna care because we're not bowlers. And he took to it like a fish to water. It's like he came home one day with a bowling shirt and a ball, and he was just ready to go. And
when you say he took to it, you mean he can put the ball down on the ground, he can bend over with the ball between his legs and roll it down between the bumpers?
He is to the point now where he will get almost as many strikes as me. I'm not a bowler, but now he's using the bumpers, but I think we're going to take away the bumpers tomorrow.
Does he throw a nice hook? He has a nice hook and some nice form, and he follows through.
Don't know what that means, but yeah. He is super into it.
That Pete Weber comeback right into the pocket.
Oh,
thank
Pete
you,
Weber.
Thank
yes,
you.
It is great.
Thank
I have
you.
To tell you something.
And welcome back to the Bowling Hall of Fame.
Yes.
I know. And I think Pete lives here in town. And I grew up with Pete and bowled with Pete when we were kids at Dick Weber Lanes. I know. Pete is... I'll just stop right now.
Okay.
Because I have nothing good to say about
Pete. Well, don't say any more because I'm good friends with Pete's nephew, Nick. So
okay.
Let's just leave that where it is.
Happy birthday.
happy birthday.
Go back Who do you think you are? I am. A great YouTube clip. If you want to go see Pete Weber, I think winning one of maybe it was the Players' Championship or something. It was one of the big tournaments of year. Mm-hmm. And there's a great scene where at the end he pumps his fist and says, "Who do you think you are? I am."
Right. I saw that clip on the 30 for 30 that ESPN did about him, which was a great one.
Very it's interesting, though. He used to do that when we were kids, too.
All right, Max, we've got some movies to get to. You saw the one that's going to be the big blockbuster this weekend, Disney's live-action Beauty and the Beast.
Disney's getting a lot of hatred from some more crabby people who are upset that they found a new way to print money. Because they have, and it's doing live-action versions of their animated classics. Mm-hmm. Back when Walt was starting the whole animation wing, he wrote a laundry list of, a wish list, really, of the movies he wanted, or the stories he wanted to adapt. And he had stuff like Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast that wouldn't get adapted for decades. But he had this idea of taking these stories that were in public domain that were largely unknown by a lot of Westerners.
And my daughter and her friends tonight are going to the Skyview Drive-In in Belleville to see it. They're taking one of their friends. He's never been to a drive-in.
Wow.
By the way, Skyview will
I've
be back on
either.
This summer sponsoring the Harris Challenge.
Well, good. Well. We're looking forward to that. Yeah. I'm glad that Steve got perfect weather for your daughter to go tonight.
No kidding.
It's going to be great for them. So, go ahead.
Well, what's happened with this is that generations of children have grown up with these versions of these fables being the definitive versions.
Uh-huh.
So if you go and read Little Mermaid or if you read Pinocchio, you're reading a very different story than what Disney put out, you know, with their animated versions. But especially with Beauty and the Beast, which had amazing lyrics from Howard Ashman and great music from Alan Menken, that was a turning point with Disney animation. After the accolades from Little Mermaid, they made a movie that really could be enjoyed by everybody, by the entire family. And there was a critic at the time, back in 91, who called it the best musical not on Broadway. Because it's just the songs like Be Our Guest and Belle, I mean, they're just amazing songs. The movie has, of course, become a stone-cold classic. It was the first and only, at the time, movie to be nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards.
Really?
It was the only animated film to ever have that distinction. Years later, they made, of course, a category for animated film. And people thought, well, that's too bad because another animated film will never have that prestige until 2009 when Up was also nominated for Best Picture.
Okay,
something
that
I had forgotten, and I was actually shooting my mouth off saying the Beauty and the Beast was the only one, and somebody corrected me and said, actually, check your facts, and I will fall on my sword and say, wow, Up actually had that too.
Mm-hmm. Neither of them won.
Neither of them won, no. Okay. Although Up might have, should have, could have, would have, because it's a great, great film.
Sure is.
Beauty and the Beast was adapted for a Broadway musical a couple of years ago. Huge hit. They had to write a whole bunch of new songs for it. None of those songs from the Broadway musical are in this film. There is, because they said the structure was all wrong. Like, the Beast had this big song in the Broadway musical of She's Not Going to Love Me and I Can't Believe She Left, and it brings down the house, and people were upset that this isn't in the movie. But as Alan Menken said, people aren't leaving in the middle of the movie to go get concessions. So they took that out. So what they did instead was they actually found lyrics that the late Howard Ashman had written for that original production that were cut out. And Menken wrote new music for it. And so now you have songs like Days in the Sun and Evermore that really do feel like they fit because they're kind of cut from that cloth from 91.
So when you say the songs from the Broadway musical are not in this movie,
exactly.
are the songs from the animated movie? In the live version?
Yes, six of those songs are. So you'll hear Belle and Be Our Guest and Beauty and the Beast, which is, and my friend Carl was upset that Angela Lansbury was not asked to. You know, she's like, Angela Lansbury is still alive. But Emma Thompson plays Mrs. Potts, and she does a great, great job.
Okay.
The cast is beyond belief. It's one of the best ensembles that Disney's been able to put together for. It's a little bit of a stretch called a live-action film. These are enchanted creatures, and so they're all CG. Cogsworth the Clock is a CG character. Lumiere, the Candelabra is computer-generated. So it's sort of like the live-action version of Jungle Book that Disney did. You have a lot of CG going on here, too, especially the Beast, who's sort of a humanoid water buffalo. And Dan Stevens...
That was Dan's nickname in high school.
Yeah. Dan Stevens kind of has the thankless part of playing this character whose face you only see toward the end. They never give the prince a name, either. It's sort of beyond the point. He's the Beast. You don't have to give him... a name. This version, though, it should be known as not a shot-for-shot remake of that animated film, and that's a very good thing. This is about a half an hour longer, and what they do is they fill in the gaps that fans have had issues with for a long time. For instance, what happened to Belle's mother? We know that she died, but what happened to her? You're going to find out here. The elements of the Beast's curse, how old he is when the curse takes place, why the curse is there, how it affects the rest of the town, all that's different. And it makes for much more effective and stronger storytelling here. Also, watching Belle fall in love with Beast, spoiler alert, they fall in love, is a little easier to take.
It's not called Beauty and the Beast Don't Like Each Other.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas in the movie, they have a snowball fight, and then, hey, they fall in love. And here, you see how much they have in common. They both consider themselves outcasts. So the love story actually works a lot better, too.
She doesn't think to herself, well, the reproductive possibilities are endless here, because he is, after all, a humanoid water buffalo.
He is a humanoid water buffalo. Yeah. Yeah, he is. But
now, is this a
one.
True story?
It is a true story. It happened in France, actually.
Oh, I'll be darned.
You've got St. Louis and Kevin Kline as her father, Maurice, who's not quite the bumbling idiot that he is in the animated film. And you've got Luke Evans, who you might know from the recent Hobbit films. He plays Gaston. Now, that's a great part. You can really chew into that part. And he's probably the best element of this movie. Overall, I think it's a resounding success. If you are a fan of that... animated film, this is an even better version of that story. They take their time, they let it breathe, and they actually, I think they've made a better version.
All right, two questions in that regard. One, is it as kid-friendly as the animated version obviously is? And two, if you only know it from that animated version and you see this, will you go, that's not the same movie?
Ooh, these are great questions. Okay, number one, I was surprised. When I was writing my review, I went ahead and put PG-13 down because it's a dark fantasy and there's some violence toward the end and there's some peril throughout and you're kidnapping people.
Plus the interspecies romance.
A little bit of that. And so I had to check my work and it turns out it's only PG. And upon thinking about it, I think if you've got a kid who's 10, 11, 12, they'd be just fine seeing this. However, for the much younger kids, I still think the animated version is the way to go because it is a humanoid water buffalo who's kind of scary. So I wouldn't take the youngest kids.
And there's always a however in life.
Yes.
And as far as if you are not familiar with this story or the Broadway play or the animated film, if this is your first time seeing these characters, I think you'll laugh. I think that it might make you choke up a little bit, and I think you're going to love these songs. It does not, however, match the animated film in two respects. Number one, Be Our Guest, which was the high watermark of that first movie, is a showstopper. It's a showstopper because not only is the song amazing, but it's animation, okay? watching a computer-generated plate run around, not quite the same effect. So I don't think it has quite the same show-stopping quality as it did in that animated film. The other thing is Emma Watson. She is a great choice for Belle. I think a lot of audience members are aware of her feminist activism anyway, and that informs her performance as Belle. She fits in the small town. She also fits and looks great in the yellow dress. She's not the most accomplished singer in the world. I mean, she can certainly carry a tune, but when you've listened to Paige O'Hara sing and voice Belle for 25 years, it lacks a little something.
Hmm. Okay. What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I'd give it a 9, Paul.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, for what they're trying to do, I think it's one of their better live-action efforts.
So will it rule the box office this weekend?
It's going to rule the box office. I could see this getting a re-release for Christmas. I think that they're going to milk this for as much as they can. And plus, it's very, very good.
Okay, now Kong, which we reviewed last week.
Yes.
That ruled the box office. Surprised a lot of people how much it made.
It did.
Over $60 million, right?
I was saying that Logan was going to beat it, and I guess other people had said the same thing, and we were all wrong. Also, my dad is very mad at me that I didn't like Kong. He was just texting me a moment ago, and he's very angry that I didn't like the movie. So sorry,
Dad.
Oh,
and Frank loved Kong.
Yeah.
As well.
I'm making enemies.
I liked it also.
Yeah.
I didn't love it, but I liked it.
I'm making enemies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So who will win this weekend?
Oh, Beauty and the Beast.
The humanoid water buffalo will beat the giant 100-foot-tall mm-hmm. ape?
Yes, and you know, it faces some competition next week from a monster alien movie called Life, but I don't think I think for 2 weeks at least, Beauty and the Beast number one.
Okay. The movie that I saw this week is a very, very different kind of movie. It's called The Sense of an Ending. How do I start? Let me tell you the plot of the movie, and then I'll tell you what I think of it. It's a small, independent movie, stars a bunch of British people. So, in other words, you're only going to see this if you go to Plaza Frontenac.
Sure.
In the movie, Jim Broadbent plays Tony, a guy in his late 60s who owns a little camera shop in London. And one day he finds out that an old friend of his has died and left Tony a diary. This makes Tony think of his youth when he spent lots of time with his friend at boarding school. You know those English boarding schools, that kind of movie. We flash back to see him back in those days having fun with his friends and getting involved with a woman named Veronica. Mm. They spend some time together, but she eventually leaves him and he ends up marrying somebody else who he's now divorced from. But he's always thought of Veronica.
So they're at Riverdale High. He marries Betty, but he's always thinking about Veronica.
There you go.
Okay.
Now it turns out that Veronica is the one who has the diary, and she won't give it to Tony. And that's about all the conflict you're going to get out of this drudgery. Because that's the only word I can use to describe it.
So you loved it.
I will tell you this. Veronica is played by Charlotte Rampling, who, as far as I'm concerned, for no good reason, was nominated 2 years ago for an Oscar for her role in the similarly boring 45 Years.
Did not like that movie at all.
Either did I. In fact, I never got the whole Charlotte Rampling thing all the way back to The Verdict.
Sure.
And I don't care about Tony, and I don't care about Veronica. I didn't care about anybody in this movie, which should have been called 46 Years, because it's just like that other one in the fact that it's long and it's boring. And let me say this.
It does sound similar as far as the conflict being this nebulous thing of, hey, I want that book. It does sound sort of similar to 45.
It is, in that way. Now, when you name your movie The Sense of an Ending, it's based on a novel by the same title, and I'm sure book groups have read this novel and whatever. When you name your movie The Sense of an Ending, you are essentially leaving yourself open to easy shots from critics. For instance, I wish this movie actually had an ending. Or while I was watching it, I was worried that it would never end. Or sitting through this made me wish I'd lost my senses of sight and hearing. All those things come in there. And by the way, all of them are correct. Are you getting the sense that I didn't like this movie?
Yes, I am.
It's going to be on my worst of the year list.
Really?
2 out of 10.
So not just a movie you didn't enjoy.
No,
a movie
I hated
you couldn't
it.
See the point of you. You really
yeah.
hated this.
I was sitting there in the movie thinking to myself, can I actually leave in the middle of a screening?
Mm-hmm.
Which I never do.
I have not done
if
that.
If I go
either.
To a press screening, I feel like
you're going to review it. You got to see the whole thing.
Exactly. I've got to stick through this thing. But I was really tempted, and I could not wait for it to end. And there are things that happen at about 80%, 85% of the movie in, that far into the movie, where you could easily just say, and now let's go to the denouement. Let's get to the resolution. Nope. First, we got to take this left turn into something else that has nothing to do with our actual plot.
So without getting into spoilers, of course.
I'll spoil this all you want.
You can't call a movie A Sense of an Ending without talking about the ending, I think. So was the... Because 45 years...
No, there's no... You're asking if there's a resolution. There is no good resolution to this movie.
Because we talked about this off the air when we talked about 45 years. There's a moment in 45 years where they introduce something intriguing, and you think to yourself, oh, here's where the story's going to go, and then they completely abandon it for just to get back to the drudgery of nothingness. In this movie, are they building to something, some big reveal?
There's a distraction that has nothing to do with the actual plot involving Jim's pregnant daughter giving birth, but that to do with it. That's the part where you go, I have to sit through 10 more minutes of this because of that. And then when they finally do resolve things, they don't actually resolve them. We just come to the end and we see Jim now as a grandfather, and who the hell cares?
Is there a humanoid water buffalo in this?
I would have killed for a humanoid water buffalo to come running through the movie theater, through the screen, and stop the screening of this piece of garbage. It's called A Sense of an Ending. If you have any sense in your ending, your butt, you will not put it in the seat in a movie theater that's showing this.
Yeah, that's a good segue.
Thank you very much. I give it a 2 on a scale of
2.
10.
Yeah. 2 seems generous after listening to you.
Yeah, really.
Well,
I would go 1.
That's because earlier this year I saw The Comedian with Robert De Niro.
Is that a 1?
Which right now is the leader for worst movie of the year. But it's early because Woody Allen's movie hasn't come out yet, and every year he's a contender for worst movie of the year, or at least the last couple. So there you go. Now let's take a break. When we come back, we've got other movie and TV stuff to get to, including a couple of DVDs of big movies from last year that I watched in the last few days. We'll get to that and lots more as the Showbiz Show continues here on the Big 550 KTRS. Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. One of the greatest harmonica players in history, James Cotton.
What?
Who just died at the age of 81.
Wow.
I know that you consider yourself one of the best.
Yeah.
His nickname was Mr. Super Harp. Dan's nickname was Mr. Yeah, he has a harp.
Yeah.
James Cotton not only had his own band, but also played with Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and B.B. King and Greg Allman and Santana and the Grateful Dead and a bunch of others. One of the best purveyors of the mouth organ. Dead at 81 yesterday. This is the Showbiz segment of the show. I am Paul Harris. That's Dan Strauss. That's Ian Geist. This is Max Foisy. And we have a couple of other things to get to here. I watched a couple of movies this week on DVD that came out last year. One was Allied with Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard, a.k.a. the movie that broke up his marriage, right?
You think so?
Well, that's what the stories were at the time.
Yeah, I don't think that... I don't think they hooked up. I have insiders on the
end. You do?
I do.
Okay.
She just had a kid. I don't think she's in a committed relationship. I don't think that happened.
Okay, well, it doesn't really matter to me. Here's the story on the movie.
I'm sticking up for Mary.
During World War II, he is a spy who parachutes into French Morocco and then has to go on a mission. And in that mission, he's teamed up with a French woman who is going to play his wife, who's also a spy, and the two of them have to go and assassinate a high-ranking German, and that's their mission in that town, and they do that mission, and then they get away, and they fall in love, and he says, why don't you come to London and live with me? And they get the okay from the higher-ups for her to do that, and time goes by, and they have a baby. And then the higher-ups come to him and say, oh, you know what we've just discovered? She's a German spy. She's not with us. She's with them. And worse for you, she's not the woman you believe she actually was all along here. Now, that's a pretty intriguing storyline to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, this movie did virtually no box office. And I don't know why. It's actually pretty good. The action sequences are pretty good. The two leads are very good. It's well directed. I enjoyed it. Is it a great movie? No. But I think it might be worth your time. This may be one of those movies that you watch at home. Get it from Netflix, get it from Amazon Prime, whatever. It's called Allied. I thought it was okay.
I feel like some people would rather read gossip columns about Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie rather than go see their movies, because I know that, respectively, how many hits have they had recently? I mean, Jolie hasn't hit in years.
No.
And then Pitt hasn't really either. I mean, World War Z was losing money. They can't get a sequel off the ground. But people love reading about them. They're more celebrities than they are.
Yeah.
Because when this movie comes out, had it been Matt Damon, who people like going to see, you know, and maybe keep Marion Cotillard there, I don't know. But people might have gone to see it. I don't know. It's just with Brad Pitt, I don't think that he's the box office draw that he...
Was he ever?
I don't believe so. Again, he was more famous for being famous.
Yeah.
And for being very handsome.
I think that's a great point. You're absolutely
right. Angelina Jolie, it always angered me that she won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for Girl Interrupted, which I thought was a decent adaptation of a really good book. Winona Ryder, that was her passion project. She produced the film. She helped put it together.
That was great in the movie.
She kind of lost her mind making that movie.
Yeah.
And she was great in that film, but it's a more understated part, and she was completely overlooked. And you give it to Jolie, who, besides that role, which to me was just a very easy, look, I'm crazy kind of performance that I guess won her the...
That's what gets you Oscars.
But she's done nothing. She's done nothing before or since then to make her an A-lister star.
Well, and I would agree with that, but she's done a couple of good things. Did you see a movie she made called Salt?
Oh, I didn't like Salt.
Okay, we disagree on that.
I
thought she was very good. It's a good action movie. I didn't care for the Lara Croft movies or any of that stuff, but I thought she was good in that, and she was also good as Marianne Pearl in what was the movie about Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal reporter who was beheaded?
The Mighty Heart.
She was very, very good in that.
It's not that she's not a capable actress. It's just she's always put on the A-lister list. And I'm thinking it's only because she's a celebrity.
Yeah,
it's not really because of the box office or because of her, you know, her work.
Yeah, you're correct.
And Brad, unfortunately, I mean, I think Brad's a very good actor. He's, you know, Burn After Reading and 12 Monkeys. He's done some really good stuff.
Seven.
Fight Club, Seven. But those were 20-some years ago now.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. Now, speaking of people who are better known for their celebrity than anything else, I also saw Jennifer Lawrence's movie from last year called Passengers.
Oh, you are ahead of the curve on this for me, because I missed the screenings for those.
Me too.
And I had heard such dreadful things that I decided, you know, I could take my time before I watch
that. That's exactly what I said. Yeah. And so this week I watched it. In the movie, Chris Pratt is a passenger on a spaceship that is going to be in space for 120 years before they get to a new colony planet called Homestead 2, one of many planets run by the Homestead Corporation. And that's all you need to know about that. That part of the plot doesn't matter at all.
Sure, it's just they're on the ship.
Ship is fully automated, and it's going to be in space for 120 years, and they're going to wake people up on the ship a few weeks before they're going to get to the Homestead planet, and then they'll learn what they need to do about living on a planet, etc., and never going back to Earth. The problem is, 30 years into the 120 years, there is something that goes wrong in space, and Chris Pratt is awakened from hypersleep, which they're all in. 5,000 passengers, 250 crew members. He's the only one who's awakened.
Hmm.
And what that means is he's not going to make it to the planet.
And he's also going to die alone.
Correct.
He's just going to be, it's like solitary confinement now.
He is the only one on board there, and there are 90 years to go with no one except there's a robot character played by Michael Sheen, who's a bartender. You may know him if you've ever seen Masters of Sex or some other things. And he's fine. I mean, he's obviously in there for comic relief, and he's fine. But still, when you're a guy who looks like Chris Pratt, Michael Sheen's not going to quite do it for you. So he is looking around at some of the people who are in the hypersleep area, and he looks over, and there's Jennifer Lawrence lying there, peacefully sleeping, and now we have to think to ourselves, who is this woman, A, and B, now that I've read up on her in the ship's logs, and I'm interested in her, am I wrong to wake her up so that I can have some companionship for the rest of this trip, and in so doing, doom her to die on this ship with me and never get to this destination that she thinks she's going to.
Nothing creepy about that.
Nothing at all. Space stalker is what you call it.
Well, and just based on your description, taking out the trailers that I've seen and the tone of the film, which I think I know based on that, a darker version of the story Sounds intriguing to me because it's a horrible thing that this character does.
Yes. Absolutely horrible. It's okay, though, if she never finds out. But if she never finds out, you don't have a movie. And you do have a movie here, so obviously we know where things go. Now, I like both of these people. I don't think everything Jennifer Lawrence does is good. You can look at the movie Joy as an example of that. But she's done some other things that she was very, very good in. Mm-hmm. Chris Pratt, I can't tell him from a Hemsworth. He's just one of these Hollywood hunks. Fine, he's okay in the role, too. Their romance on board the ship, that's fine. Michael Sheen for the comic relief, that's fine. The science fiction sucks. Absolutely sucks. And I also think that in the last, about 80% of the movie in, the people who were making this movie realized, we got to figure out a way to fix something here and come to a resolution. Otherwise, this just turns out to be the two of them on a ship that's falling apart.
You know, if I'm in this situation, if I'm Chris Pratt and I understand the motivations of, I think I'll wake that one up. I mean, I totally, you know, but if I woke up Jennifer Lawrence, I would think the first thing she would do is, well, let's wake up Paul and Ian and Dan so we have some more companionship. Let's wake up half the ship.
Yeah, because I have nothing for you, pal.
His first thought actually is, let's wake up the crew. But unfortunately, because it's a movie, the crew is in a part of the ship that none of the passengers can get to.
Yeah, now see? Screenwriting. I'm intrigued, though. Paul, I missed this one. I put it off like you. I know that it was nominated for two Oscars for score from Thomas Newman, who is great at film scores in American Beauty.
Yep.
And lots of other things. And also production design, I guess, because of the ship and everything. It lost that to Fantastic Beasts, though, the Harry Potter movie.
Okay.
So, striking-looking film?
Yes. The science fiction is wrong. The acting is fine. The story idea is fine. It's one of those movies that when it's over, you go, okay, that was all right.
Who are the other people? How many other people are sleeping in this?
5,250.
And that shows them?
Yes, you see them one by one, and we learn about them.
You see them in hypersleep. Now, don't ask me any more questions past that, because now we're getting into spoiler territory.
Sure.
Could you imagine being an extra? You're an extra. Okay, you're going to lay down, and that's all you do, lay down and sleep. Yeah.
Dan, you were an extra. Did you do much more than that in the air?
No, I stood there.
That's about it.
So if I can find this tonight on Amazon and bring it up on my Kindle, should I watch it?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, give it a shot.
I would say if you already have Netflix or Amazon Prime, doesn't cost you anything.
True.
Yeah, check it out. It's not horrible. It's not great. It's not horrible. Maybe, in that 6.5-7 range out of 10.
You know what?
Passengers.
In a very Kong Skull Island kind of way, if I got about a 6 or a 7 of enjoyment out of it, I'd be fine.
Okay.
I'm going in with very low expectations.
So did I, because I heard horrible things about it, and all those horrible things were wrong.
Huh.
It's not horrible.
Wow.
But it's not great. Somewhere in the middle. So there you go.
You have convinced me to see it.
All right. You have a couple of other showbiz items you want to get to?
Yeah, some things that tie into the live-action version of Beauty and the Beast, which is hitting theaters. We mentioned that Disney's done this with Jungle Book and Maleficent and Alice in Wonderland and Cinderella. They're doing Mary Poppins Return soon. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, who worked on the songs for Moana, is reteaming with another ocean-based movie for Disney to do a live-action version of The Little Mermaid. Now, after Beauty and the Beast makes all the money in the world this weekend, I'm sure they'll fast-track this, and all they need now is to find a redhead who can sing to play Ariel. And I'm going to show you a picture now, Paul, of the young lady who wants this part.
Okay.
You want to tell everybody who it is?
I have no idea who it is.
That's Lindsay Lohan.
Really?
Lindsay Lohan wants the part?
Lindsay Lohan posted this picture of her next to the animated Ariel on her social media and says, this is perfect for me. This is going to be my comeback. I want to do that. I get where she's coming from. She sees Emma Watson as Belle, and she's thinking, I could do that too.
And she can sing.
And she can sing, and she's a Disney kid, and she was very, very talented. I've been a defender of hers for a long time, but she has a lot of issues, a lot of problems. And
she was is the operative word there.
That's the thing. When you have a young performer who constantly surprises you and is really good in a lot of things, and then addiction hits, it obviously derails personal life and professional life too. I know that people like Tina Fey have tried to do outreach with her and try, and I appreciate how it must be difficult to see, again, to see Emma Watson doing this, going, I'm going to do this too. What my advice would be, if Lindsay Lohan was here in the room with us, my advice would be is maybe don't go for the leading role for your comeback. Look at the people who have done comebacks like John Travolta or Mickey Rourke. You know, they've done these little parts like in Sin City or in Pulp Fiction. Then they get back. Maybe go for Flounder the Fish, maybe, in Little Mermaid. And maybe not Ariel. I don't know. But that's...
I'm going to tell you right now, there's no insurance company that's going to write the policy on Lindsay Lohan in a leading role
and that almost,
on a $100 million dollar movie.
That almost prevented Robert Downey Jr. from being Iron Man.
Yep.
Because it was either Jodie Foster or Mel Gibson. Somebody had to sign for him because Marvel didn't want to hire him because he was a liability.
Yep.
So I guess I don't know who's going to be Ariel, but I would imagine it's not Lindsay Lohan. But as much as we're mocking her, I do feel bad for her that she lost everything.
She was very talented.
She was very talented.
Yeah. I think the perfect Ariel would be, and I cannot remember. I've drawn a complete blank with her name. She was in a movie, and she played the princess that came out from...
Amy Adams,
that's
it. You know, everybody that I
would... From Enchanted?
Yes. Everybody that I would think of, like an Amy Adams or an Emma Stone, any of the famous redheads who can sing, I mean, all of them can sing as well, they're all a bit too old. I mean, you know,
Amy Adams is like 38, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, Emma Watson, I think, is about 25, 26. That's about the cutoff for these princesses, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, in the movie, I think Ariel's 16. I imagine they wouldn't get a 16-year-old just for story complications.
Emma Stone?
I don't know. How old is Emma Stone?
28?
Yeah, see, that might be pushing it. I don't know. I hate to be ageist about it.
Wow, you're
right,
difficult,
I'm a horrible person,
man.
I know, right?
You're tough on these.
Also, Jon Favreau, who directed Jungle Book, and he won an Oscar for the special effects on Jungle Book, which were incredible. He's going to do what they're calling a live-action version of The Lion King, but it'll be a live-action version in the sense that Jungle Book was. Meaning Idris Elba was Shere Khan, but it was his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing that too. You're not going to have like the stage play where people are wearing animal outfits. You won't actually see them. But he has a couple of new hires for this movie. He's got Donald Glover, very talented young actor from Atlanta and Community, and he'll also be the young Lando Calrissian in the Han Solo movie. But he's going to be playing Simba, the lion, and none other than the original voice of Mufasa returns as Mufasa.
James Earl Jones,
which is amazing casting.
Did James Earl Jones sing in the movie? No, I don't think so. I don't think he did.
I don't think so. I think in the stage play there was a Mufasa song.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. But that's going to be, I mean, if Jungle Book and Beauty and the Beast are any indication, that's going to be huge.
They should have Lion King meets the Wizard of Oz.
I think that's probably the next step is crossing over all these movies, right?
Yeah.
Disney would probably cross over with its own movies. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, Disney owns pretty much everything. I'm sure they could do that.
Yeah. This weekend, TCM, Turner Classic Movies, is doing a two-day tribute to the late Robert Osborne, who was the face and voice of that channel as the guy who introduced all the old movies every night. You'd turn it on at 7 o'clock, and there he'd be for 3 or 4 minutes telling you about the history and some trivia about the movie, whatever it is. He did it for, I think, 23 or 24 years from the time they started that channel. And over the weekend, they're going to show a tribute that they did to him on his 20th anniversary, and also interviews where he sat down and talked to some people who were involved in some major movies, like Peter O'Toole and Eva Marie Saint and Liza Minnelli and Alan Arkin and Norman Jewison, who, as a director, he had a few hits that you might have heard of, like Fiddler on the Roof, Moonstruck, In the Heat of the Night, The Cincinnati Kid, The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, Rollerball, all of those were Norman Jewison movies. So that's one of the things. And they only have about 8 different shows, but they're going to turn it into a 48-hour tribute to Robert Osborne, which means they're going to rerun some of these. So check your DVR screen if you want to see any of that. I've already set to record a few of those. They start tomorrow morning on TCM.
Wasn't James Caan in Rollerball?
Yes, he was.
Wow.
In the original one with John Houseman.
Wow.
The guy from Paper Chase.
I remember that.
Anybody remember even one of the cast members from the remake?
No. Was it LL Cool J?
It was LL Cool J.
Thank you
very much. Yeah, very nice. Very nice. And I think it was Chris Klein, who was famous for being Katie Holmes' boyfriend before Tom Cruise.
That was it?
And then Rebecca Romijn. There's your trio of people in the...
And the final showbiz item I want to mention here is that Saturday Night Live is going to be doing their show live to all time zones starting in the middle of April on Saturday nights. We already get it at 10:30. They do it at 11:30 in New York, which is 10:30 here, so we actually are seeing it live. But if you lived in the Mountain Time Zone or the Pacific Time Zone or Hawaii or Alaska, you did not see it live. You saw it recorded and then played back later on. Starting on April 15th, when Jimmy Fallon returns to the show as the host, they're going to do it live across all time zones.
So what would that mean if you're living in the Mountain Time Zone? When is it on for you?
One hour before it is here, so 9:30.
9:30.
Yeah, and then 8:30.
8:30 on the West Coast.
Yeah. 8:30, that's a little early for SNL, some of the sketches they do, 8:30 at night.
Yeah.
Well, they already run SNL reruns in primetime on Saturdays.
True.
But they probably have to be a little bit careful about that.
I think
that.
Those are about 20 years old or so. I'm sure that
they do the show on delay, so they don't have to worry about anybody saying anything. What it means is that the people in those time zones who are also on social media don't have to wait 3 hours to see this thing that they're reading about that somebody loved on Twitter or whatever it is. And I got to tell you, this season, that show, SNL, has been pretty damn good, thanks to Kate McKinnon and Melissa McCarthy playing Sean Spicer. Mm-hmm. She's going to come back and host.
A.D. Bryant's great.
Alec Baldwin as Trump. And what's the name of the guy? Beck Bennett, who plays Vladimir Putin. they've been really, really good.
Funny.
Now, I'll be honest with you. I don't watch the show. I just wait till the next day when people post it online.
Well, they put it almost the whole show on their YouTube channel now.
Yeah.
Just individual skits.
Which is smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't need to see it live, and the fact that it's going to be live doesn't mean much, except, I guess, people in California who didn't like seeing you write about it on Facebook before they could see it.
I wonder if they're trying it out for advertising. To say, like, oh, we'll be live everywhere, you know, buy your ads.
And by the way, that's prime time in Los Angeles and San Francisco and San Diego and all those other large markets on the West Coast. That's a very good point. Could be. That's the showbiz stuff for this week. Next hour, we'll have the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News and Mike Evans here on the Big 550 KTRS.